There. Welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. Sorry, this one's a couple of days later than they usually come. I was away for Memorial Day weekend, went up to Mendocino County for my fiance's birthday, and we had an amazing stay at this place called the Stanford Inn with massages and yoga and canoeing up the big river and just generally kind of enjoying some of California before we leave and move back to London in the middle of August. So that was just great. And I'm back, and I am full of frijoles, as they say. One thing to mention before I get to the reading, I wrote an essay about fan fiction in the current issue of Locus magazine called In Praise of Fanfic. If you put that into Google, it'll come right up. It's attracted a lot of warm attention, something I'm very glad of, and a little bit of what I think of as not very serious critical attention from people who think that fan fiction is a form of unmitigated evil. But generally speaking, the response has been really, really positive, and I've been very glad to see it. Anyways, it's gotten, hundreds of links to it so far, and I thought if you're one of the few who haven't read it, you might be interested in checking it out, since apparently it's something that struck a chord. So with that all said and out of the way, on to the reading. The Wireheads don't mind the occasional house guest, but anyone who's going to actually live in the settlement needs to join the cult. They don't want any violent, emotional, unpredictable people running around making things difficult for them. The deal is a simple one. Get the wire in your head, get free food, shelter, and community forever. Don't get the wire in your head, and you have to get out of town. You'd be surprised how many people don't want to play along with this system. I guess I count as one of those people. The cult's gotten pretty good at spotting freeloaders who want to live in the peace and prosperity of the cult, but don't want to join up. These people seem to think that so long as they're doing their share of the work, they should be able to stick around. What they don't understand is that the work isn't the important part. Robots can do the heavy lifting, as much as we let them do of it. The important thing is the stability. Here in Wirehead Country, nothing important ever changes. New people come in, old people die, babies are born, kids go to school. I went with them for a little while in my Wirehead days, but decided I didn't need to keep going to classes after 3 or 4 years, and no one seemed to mind. No one minds what anyone else does once you're a Wirehead. Since we can all feel each other's emotions, it's impossible to resent someone without him knowing about it, and it's impossible to feel guilty without others know it. Your whole attitude towards your neighbors is on permanent display, visible from a mile off. My own antenna seems to radiate a calm acceptance no matter what I'm feeling, and lets me know what others are feeling without swamping me with their emotions. The work gets done. Progress never happens. We've banished progress here in the Wirehead cult. That's okay, I suppose. Who needs it? So I've been living in Florida, up near Jacksonville and Wiki Country, Lacey said, over our breakfast. I kept a larder of fresh fruit in the maintenance space under the stage, and Lacey had been glad to help me slice up a couple of delicious fruit salads. I put some yogurt up a few days before, and it was mature enough to pour over top, with some sunflower seeds left over from the last autumn. The city was good, but it got to me, all that change, all the time. I tried to garden a little patch of it, just a little spot where I could put up a house, but there were so many trolls who kept overriding my planning permission with this idea for a motorcycle racing track. I'd revert their changes, they'd revert back, then one of the old ones would come by and freeze my spot for a month and lecture us. Then they'd be back on day 31. I only met them face to face once. I picture them as old Florida bikers, leathery and worn, but they were teenagers, just kids. I looked away at the blue sky overhead, visible through the riotous colors of the leaves. Sorry, she said. You know what I mean, though. These were like 8 16-year-olds, and they'd built their bikes to build actual hydrocarbons. These things made so much goddamn noise. Your old Mecca was quieter. They rode them up to my house one day, left all 6 in my garden among my flowers, growling, and rang my doorbell. I had built a little gypsy caravan with flower boxes and bright paint, all prefab vac-grown woodite, impervious to weather and bugs, watertight at the seams, breathing through a semi-permeable roof and floor. It was a really nice piece of engineering. My parents would have liked it. I answered the door, and they pointed to their motorcycles and explained that they'd spent an entire year building and tuning them, and that my little house was the only thing stopping them from building a racetrack. They wanted me to move the house to somewhere else. They were extra pissed because my house had wheels, so how hard could it be to relocate? They even offered to find me somewhere else, get me a tow. I told them no, I liked it there. I liked my garden, what was left of it. Liked the creek down the hill from me, liked the view of the big city on the other side of the hill, all those lights. They told me that their parents had lots of money and they could get me a real big place somewhere up high in the city, maybe even put my caravan on a roof there. She stopped talking while we picked our way down a hillside. We were headed for my own creek, which was cold and brisk, but still swimmable for a week or two. I brought a bar of soap. I told them to get off my land. I also recorded them from my front window as they shouted things at me and threw stuff at my door. It turned out to be dead animals. They left a dead rabbit or squirrel on my doormat every day for a week. I added pictures to the discuss page for the zoning, and the old ones were properly affronted and froze their editing privileges. But they didn't let up. They had a whole army of sock puppets they were paying in Missouri, a boiler room outfit where they do the actual work on the wiki, improving it a lot, building up credibility and making themselves very welcome, and then come along and edit my zoning. It got so I was doing nothing but staying home all day and reverting and arguing with these guys. Then I went away for a couple days. There was a barbecue festival in a big field outside of town, and I got invited to compete, so I was working over a smoker there, and when I got back, guess what? Your caravan was gone, and they were racing motorcycles where it used to be. Exactly, she said. Exactly. They'd knocked down the trees, dammed the stream, paved everything, put in half pipes. Even if I changed the zoning back, I wouldn't want to live there again. I would have been pissed, I said. Normally, I said, getting down to my skin and jumping into the stream, sputtering and blowing. Normally, I'd have waded in a few millimeters at a time, but I was still uncomfortable being nude in front of her, so I just plunged. She followed suit. You'd think, huh? But I was resigned at that point. I moved to the city, which has its own charms. Remember that they said they could get me that rooftop? Well, it turns out the roofs were easy to get. Not many people wanted to sleep on the 90th floor of a tower, but I found it as peaceful as anything. I strung my hammock and put up my tents and settled in to love my view. Sometimes it was hard to remember that this was Lacey Treehugger, the girl who thought that all concrete was a sin. 90 floors up. Damn. There were more people coming down to the creek. Double damn. Lacey had been there 3 days, and we had managed to avoid my neighbors the whole time, but my luck had run out. They had the typical wirehead look, one-piece, short-sleeved garments that shed dirt, so they glowed faintly. Stripes and piping were the main decorations. Someone had designed this outfit in the early days of the cult, and no one had ever redesigned it. Of course not. Why change anything around here? There were three of them. I recognized them at once. Sebastian, a guy in his 20s whom I'd known since he was a baby. Tina, an older woman with teak-colored skin. And Brent, her son, who was 11, the same as me. Sort of. "Hello there," Sebastian said. I felt the tickle of their emotions from the vestiges of my antenna, a kind of oatmeal-bland wash of calm nullity. "Haven't seen you in a few days," he noticed Lacey and squinted at her. She had sunk down low so that only her round face stuck up out of the sluggish water. "Hello to you, too," he said. "I'm Sebastian. This is Tina and Brent." They all waved, except for Brent, who was bending down and examining a frog he'd found on a flat rock. "This is my friend Lacey," I said. Sebastian drove me crazy. He was born and bred to the cult and always wanted to talk to me about how much better life was now that I was living with the wireheads. He was the kind of zealot who made me worry that if I didn't watch his enthusiasm, it matches enthusiasm, that he'd try to figure out if my antenna was working properly. Talking to him always put me on my guard. Lacey waved. "We're here for a swim," he said, like it wasn't obvious. He didn't ask if we minded. No wirehead would, but instead just started stripping down to the bathing trunks he wore under his jumpsuit, giving me an accidental glimpse of his bony ass. Tina did the same, taking his hand and squeezing it. Then Brent struggled out of his. Tina and her ex-husband had Brent, and then split while he was still a baby. One of those weird, calm wirehead divorces, so mellow they might as well have been happening underwater. They slipped into the water with us, and I knew I was going to have to say something. "I'm sorry," I said, "but we're not wearing anything in here. Do you mind looking away while we get out?" Sebastian and Tina had made it into their shins, and their bodies broken out in goose flesh from the icy, bracing water. "Oh, Jimmy, Tina said. "We're sorry." All three of them caught her sadness and looked downcast. Reflexively, I looked sad, too. Gradually, they caught the larger emotion of the group, still perceptible at this distance, and got happier again. "Don't worry about it," I said, once the sun had risen on their moods again. It was inconsiderate of us. I didn't think anyone else would be down by the river on a day like this. We like it cold, Sebastian said. Wakes up the body. Then Brent took a few toddling steps into the water, slipped and splashed them. They laughed and splashed him back. There was a moment of frenzy as they caught each other's surprise and glee, and then it, too, dampened down. Well, we're just about done here, I said. Nice to meet you, Lacey said. They turned their backs, but I caught Brent sneaking a peek before he looked away, too. Nice to meet you, too, Tina said. You be sure and come by the general meeting tonight, all right? I grunted as noncommittally as I could while pulling on my jumpsuit over my wet legs. It wicked away the wet as I struggled into it. I just wanted to get away from there. They were curious about Lacey. I could tell that even without a fully functional antenna. Lacey just pulled her smart cloak over her head and let her boots conform themselves to her feet. We had walked idly and slowly to the river, but we hurried away. I'm not supposed to be here, am I? Lacey said. No, I said. Yes. I helped her up onto the side trail that I used when I didn't want to talk to anyone. It's complicated. They're going to want you to get wired or leave. And getting wired, you wouldn't recommend it? I struggled. They're nice people. I shrugged. They're nice people. If you had to choose a group of people to share your state of mind with, they'd be a pretty good choice. But you don't think it's a good idea? I shrugged again. I let them put a wire in my head, I said. Your brain ate it, though. I looked around, suddenly paranoid. There was no one. Shh. Yes. But I didn't know that my brain would eat it when I let them install it. So why'd you do it? I thought back. I was a kid, I said at last. I just lost my dad and my home. They were nice to me. They said they'd leave me alone once I had the wire fitted. That was all I wanted. Do you like it? Did you like it? Having a wire? Well, not the worst thing in the world, having a wire. I never felt lonely, and when I was sad, it passed quickly. I think it would have been a lot harder without it. So you think it's therapeutic, then? Maybe I should get one after all. I turned around and looked at and took her hands. Don't, okay? Please. I like you this way. We got home and sat down in the theater seats. I thought we'd talk about it, but we seemed to have run out of words. I wished for a moment that we had matching antennae so that I could know what she was feeling. That was pretty weird. Show me this place, she said. I fell asleep the other night. So I started it up. I'd done a major 3-year-long maintenance project on it that had just wrapped up, so it was running as good as new, and I was proud of the work I'd done. I wish that Dad could see it. Lacey was nearly as good. We sat through the opening scene and rotated around the arc of the circle, and we went through the change to the Roaring Twenties, to the family's kitchen that was now filled with yarn-like wires coming off the ceiling light and leading to all the appliances. Dad was wearing a bow tie now and fanning himself with a souvenir of Niagara Falls fan. Dad wants to show us his all-new modern appliances, and so they all switch on and start flapping and clacking while frenetic music plays in the background. Then a fuse blows. I look this up. It means that he overloaded a crude breaker in the power supply, and the whole street goes dark. A neighbor threatens to beat him, but then Jimmy, yes, Jimmy again, changes the fuse, and the lights come back. Mom and sister are getting into costume. There's a 4th of July party that night, and Dad has to join them, but he gets us to sing his song. I noticed that Lacey tapped her toe as we went around the arc, and it made me feel very good. After the show, I made us dinner, and Lacey told me more funny stories from the road. Then we crawled into bed, and she enfolded me in her arms. We'd done that every night. I didn't cry anymore, and it felt so good, like something I'd always missed. They're going to come for you, I said, lying with my eyes open, feeling her arms around me. They are, huh? Put a wire in your head. And you don't think I should do that. I'll go with you, I swallowed. If you want. She squeezed me harder. I don't think you'll be able to carry this thing, do you? I don't mind. Liar, you've been taking care of this thing for 20 years, Jimmy. That was when I thought that Dad would come back for it. Doesn't sound like he'll come back for it now. Stupid terrorists. Who? The assholes who attacked Detroit, whoever they were. I noticed that she'd stiffened a little. I thought they were thieves at first, after our stuff. But from what you say, it sounds like they were terrorists. They just wanted to destroy it all. We probably had the last mountain of steel-belted radials in the world, you know? She didn't say anything for a bit. I can go in the morning. We can stay in touch. I want to go with you. I surprised myself with the vehemence of it. I need to get away from here. I need to get away from this thing. I punched out at the wall at the edge of the bed, giving it a hard thump and sending the pack scurrying around in circles. Fuck this thing. It's a prison. It stuck me down here. Just another one of Dad's stupid ideas. You shouldn't talk about your dad that way. He was... What? He was an asshole. Look at me. Do you think I want to be like this forever? You told me that you thought you'd found a cure for it. I laughed. Sure. But I thought that for 20 years. Nothing's worked. She hugged me tighter. It's not all bad, is it? You could be worse. You could be getting old like me. I get what I can out of the nutraceuticals, but you know, it gets harder every day. I can't walk as far as I used to, can't see as well, can't hear as well. I'm getting wrinkled. I keep finding gray hairs. Come on, I said, you're a beautiful woman. You got to grow up. I'm just a little kid. I'm going to stay a little kid forever. You got to change. Not just change, either. Progress. You got to progress to get better and smarter and wiser and, you know, more. I'm just saying it's not as good as you think it is. You get to have sex, I blurted. You get to know what it's like. You've never? Never, I said. Physiologically, I don't know, I'm 11 or 12. No adult would have sex with me. That's not right for me to make out with little kids. The last girl I kissed was you, Lacey. Oh, Jimmy, she said. She stroked my hair. I'm sorry. It's hard to know how to think of you. Sometimes I think you're just a little kid, but you're actually a little older than me, aren't you? Yeah, I said, but my brain doesn't age much either. It's too plastic. I don't get to build up layers of experience one on top of another. It slips out underneath. I really have to concentrate to think properly. The local scientists would be freaked out about this if they could be freaked out about anything. It's probably the only place in the world where never changing is considered to be a signal virtue. I realized that I was balling my fists up, so I relaxed them and took some deep breaths. Lacey was snuggled up against me, and it was warm and good. I tried to focus on that, and not the yawning pit in my gut. You're not going to take me with you, are you? She swallowed. We'll see. I knew what that meant. I tried not to let her hear me cry, but it shook my ribs, and she hugged me harder. She didn't say, I'll take you with, though. Of course not. She didn't want to have a kid. Didn't want to have an instant son. I woke from a strange dream of kissing and sliding skin. I had a rock-hard erection like nothing I'd ever felt before. There was that itch again in my belly, and I supposed it meant horny, though I'd never felt it like this. Lacey had drooped away from me in her sleep and was lying on her back beside me. In the dim light of the pack's glowing power indicators, I could see her chest rising and falling, her nipples visible through the thin fabric of her nightshirt. I remembered what she'd looked like naked the other night. She must have noticed my reaction, because she'd changed in private every night since. I realized that that was what I'd been dreaming of. I reached out with a tentative hand and let it barely graze over her breast. She didn't stir. It felt soft, giving under my finger. My mouth was bone dry. I pulled back the coverlet. Her long t-shirt had ridden up, and I could see her legs all the way up to the curve of her hip. I touched her hip, stroking it with the same hesitancy, warm, jouncy, firm but giving. I touched her thigh. She muttered something and stirred. I froze. She put one hand on her tummy, and her shirt rucked up higher. Now I could see all her hair down there. It was too dark to see anything more. I put my hand on her thigh again, halfway up. Her breathing didn't change. I slid my hand higher, higher still. My smallest finger brushed up against something very soft and a little moist, something that felt like a warm mushroom. Jimmy? I knew that she was awake, fully awake. I snatched my hand away. God, I'm sorry, Lacey. What are you doing, Jimmy? I couldn't find the words. It was too embarrassing, too weird, too creepy. It was the sex talk, huh? I swallowed. I calmed myself down. I decided I could talk about this like a man of science. I'm not quite physiologically there when it comes to sex. I'm kind of stuck between the first stage of sexual maturity and childhood. Normally it's not a problem, but... I ran out of science. Yeah, she said. I wondered about that. Come here, Jimmy. Awkwardly, I snuggled up to her, letting her spoon behind me. No, she said. Turn around. I turned around. I had my little boner again, and I was conscious of how it must be pressing against her thigh, the way her breasts were pressed against my chest. Her face was inches from mine, her breath warm on my lips. She kissed me. She kissed exactly like I remembered it 20 years before, slowly, with a lazy bit of tongue. Her teeth were warm in her mouth. As I tentatively reciprocated. She took my hand and put it on her breast. Her nipple was a little bump in the center of her palm, the flesh of her breast yielding under my hand. I squeezed it and rubbed it and touched it, almost forgetting the kiss. She laughed a little and pulled her shirt up and pulled my face down to her breasts. I kissed them, kissed the nipples, unsure of what to do, but hearing her breath catch when I did something right. I tried to do more of that. It was fascinating. The pack roused and squirmed over us. I pushed them away. She gave a soft little moan. Her hands roamed over my back, squeezed my butt. Her hand found my little boner. I gave a jolt, then another, as she slowly started to move her hand. Then I felt something like a sneeze that started in my stomach and went down. There was sticky stuff on her hand. "Wow," I said. "I didn't know I could do that." "Let's find out what else you can do," she said. The next day was my scheduled day at the research station, but I didn't want her to. But I didn't want to leave Lacey alone in the carousel. Not now that Sebastian and Tina knew about her. They might come by to ask her some questions about her intentions. Besides, there was the matter of what we'd done the night before. It lasted for a long time. There was a lot I didn't know. When we were done, I knew a lot more, and it was all I could think of, from the moment I woke up with the smells on me and the small aches here and there, while I was in the bathroom and pissing through a dick that felt different, gummy, and sticky, while I was washing up and digging some grapefruits out of my storehouse for breakfast, slicing them open and grabbing water from the osmotic filter for the day. Lacey was sitting up in bed, the pack arrayed around her, the sheet not covering her beautiful breasts. Her hair was in great disarray, and her mouth was a little puffy and swollen from all the kissing. "Good morning," she said, and smiled at me, her little bow mouth widening into a giant grin. I smiled back and handed her a grapefruit. I cuddled up to her as we ate, and she laughed when I got a squirt of grapefruit in the eye. We didn't say much, but then the flea, who was also in charge of my calendar reminders, began to chitter at me and tell me it was time to go to the lab. "What's he want?" "I'm supposed to see the researchers here, about my immortality. I go every couple of weeks and they do more tests, measure me. Whatever Dad did to my germline wasn't documented anywhere public. He had all these buddies around the world who treated themselves to make them immortal, and they were all refining the process. None of them seem to be anywhere that we can find them, so we're trying to reverse engineer them." "What kind of researchers would a place like this have? I'd have thought that they would be pretty hostile to R&D in a place that isn't supposed to change." "Well, when the whole world is changing all the time, it takes a lot of R&D to respond to it so that you don't have to change along with it. Some of them are pretty good. I looked up their bios. They were highly respected before they became wireheads. Mellowing out your emotions shouldn't interfere with your science anyway." "Are they trying to cure your immortality or replicate it?" I turned to look at her. "What do you mean? Cure it, of course." "Really? If they don't want any change, wouldn't it make sense to infect everyone with it?" "It makes a perverse kind of sense, I suppose. If you were into conspiracy theories, it would be believable. But I know these guys. They don't have it in them to lie to me, or to make me sad on purpose. That's the good thing about living here. You can always be sure that the people around you are every bit as nice as they seem. Sincere." "If you say so," she said. Even though she didn't have an antenna, I could feel her skepticism. "Fine, be skeptical. Wireheads didn't scheme. They just did stuff. That was what it meant to be a wirehead." She nuzzled my neck. I turned my head and we kissed. It was weird with the lights on. I broke it off and said, "I've got to get to the lab." The flea was running in little circles and chiding me, making the point. I pulled on my jumpsuit and zipped it up. "Will you be long?" I shrugged. "Couple hours," I said. "Don't answer the door, okay? I mean, just lay low. Stay here. My neighbors." "I get it," she said. "Don't want to get kidnapped and wired up, right?" "They won't kidnap you. Just put the question to you and kick you out if you give the wrong answer." "Come and give me a kiss goodbye, my brave protector," she said. I leaned in and she gave me a hard hug and a harder kiss. The hug felt like that first night, when it was just the chance to have a human being holding me, the kiss like the night before, when we'd done things I'd never given much thought to. "Love you, Jimmy," she whispered fiercely in my ear. "Dad used to say that a lot." "You too," I said, because that's what I always said to him.